Shell Answer Man. That was very funny.
I thought you'd appreciate it.
And I do remember the Jackrabbit Starts proper tire inflation guy. And the guy that did it never looked like he'd ever worked been under a car, let alone worked on one. He was
never got his hands dirty. He's no. Never changed a tire in his life.
I tell you, that was a great campaign, though, because they got you thinking that we had the answers. I mean, what else, what better campaign could there be?
And it's amazing. I didn't think about that ad until you said that and remembered those specifically, those two pieces.
Yeah. I mean, you can't talk about the quality of the fuel, because that's all the same, I think. But they can talk about the quality of the service, and that was what they hung their hats on until self-service came in and nobody had any mechanics there anymore. They had to get away from that. Okay, we're going to give people another 20 seconds. We'll start here in 20 seconds. Thank you all for your feedback, your emails. I got about 7 or 8 of them, so it really helps out, and I want to make sure that we're accomplishing what you really want to accomplish on these phone calls. We're going to try to do these once a month. Probably not in the months that we have training. I think our next live training is going to be in May. Don't know. I have the date, but I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm sure you'll be getting something on that. So we're going to leave. I'm going to leave the lines open here. So if you're traveling in a car and there's going to be a lot of background noise, if you can mute your own phone, that would be helpful. But I want to get some interaction going here, so I don't want to be muting and unmuting people's lines. So we don't have enough people on the phone that's going to be a problem, I don't think. So if we stop because the noise is terrible in the background, just check out and see if we're talking to you, because we won't be able to tell. Okay, I had my recorder all wired to have some music play right when we started, but I couldn't figure out technologically how to make that happen, so... Anyway, so that's not going to happen. So, and I'm not going to sing, that's for sure. So we're going to get going. I sent out an email, and I also sent out the agenda for today. I wanted to first start off with the RealMed value articulation and expression and words that we worked on a little bit here when we had our first training. And also, I know you've probably been working with some of your regional people. And I want to know if there's any stories that you've had, any time you've used that, and what has happened. Are you getting more comfortable with the words? And I know this is iterative. I mean, it's not like you're going to say this thing perfectly the first time, but we do want to start, because the 20th time you say it, it's going to come out better. So no time like the present to start these. Does anybody have any experience with articulating the RealMed value, and what kind of response or reaction you've gotten from prospects? Just anybody wants to start, go ahead.
Bill, this is Pauline. I did a presentation for a practice management system in Atlanta about 2 weeks ago, and I used a very consolidated, they wanted a short presentation, a very consolidated 6 slides total with the value, and they were actually very excited when we left, or when I left, and said, they definitely see it, they feel it. Their concerns is their own internal resources and timing, but the message was received very well, and there was no argument in terms of what it is we do that is different and of value than others do. So I think it worked really well, getting the first meeting and then getting the clarity of expression while we were together.
Good. Can I ask you what were on the 6 slides, what 6 things were the focus?
It was actually the first couple of slides was, just an intro slide, what it is we try to avoid, and then there were 2 slides that said, here's the value, one that said here's the value that RealMed delivers. The next one was, how do we deliver that value? And then the next slide was, to whom do we deliver that value? And instead of using the names of the organizations, I used their logos, very quick identification. And that was essentially it.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And it went over very, very well.
Very good. Sometimes less is more, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can either do the 6-slide deck or I can do the 65 slide deck. You pick, Mr. Prospect. Which one do you want me to do? Oh, the 6-slide. Okay, you better listen then. That was humor. Don't actually try that. Okay, it was my stab at humor. Very good. Anybody else have any experience similar to that, whether good or bad, about the value expression?
Yeah, Bill, this is Rob Powers. Myself and Brian met with a group in the Ohio area. It's a fairly large organization, provides billing services from multiple locations. And this was the first time we actually went into the initial meeting without the demo in hand and essentially used some of the techniques we discussed in our initial sales meeting a few weeks back and left it more of a conversational. Tell me about your organization, what are your goals, what are your issues and needs, and where would you like to be with a product like RealMed?
Mm-hmm.
And that discussion lasted for approximately an hour and went very well. There was a great deal of excitement and engagement from the people in the room, and we're in the process now of actually scheduling the typical process of walking through the technical aspects of the demo and showing them value from a user standpoint. So I do like the... Again, to kind of recap, going into these initial meetings with more of an inquisitive approach,
yeah.
Learn as much about the organization as you can, what their needs are, and kind of tie that back into value when you come back with a follow-up presentation or close at the end of that meeting.
Good. Very good. Sometimes I know we're all sort of impatient human beings. We all would just as soon have the order now than wait 3 or 4 months, but I find that upfront approach of just having a straight dialogue really does quicken the sales process in the long run. And not jumping to the solution quickens it, because now there's more mystery created. Now they're curious. Now they want to know what you can do for them because they've shared all their problems with you. Very good. Did you how did you articulate the value? Did you use any of the expressions that we talked about?
Those expressions and other expressions, essentially when they would denote various pain points or issues they were having with certain payers or certain clearinghouse solutions, we would tie back to scenarios that we were familiar with to relate that value.
Uh-huh.
So try not to keep canned approach or canned responses, but more, real-world responses.
Good.
We understand that, and here is what a client who had a similar situation, what their experience was with RealMed.
Good. Okay, one more. Anybody else have any experience of talking about the RealMed value, maybe in a little bit different way than you have in the past?
Well, yeah, I think RealMed has lots of value.
Good. Now, who was that?
That's your friend Phil here.
I thought
just thought I'd help kick off some of those comments there for you, Phil.
Silence kills you, doesn't it, on telephone?
Yes, I'm happy to be a facilitator.
So does anybody else have any experience, even if you stepped in it while you were talking about it, even if it didn't go quite according to plan, that's okay. Anybody have any other experience? Going to give you 10 more seconds.
Bill, this is Rob. I think we used it a bit when we were in the marketing materials we prepared for the Montgomery County Trade Show, and actually, didn't really use it as a script, but just as a talking point to the idea that we maximize revenue and speed up claim payment. It was just a different way of saying what we have said in the past a little more clearly and precisely, and I did find some of the comments resonated well with the prospects at the meeting.
Outstanding. Yeah, this is not something you just use sales call face to face. I mean, this is part of who RealMed is. So that's really good.
Hey guys, this is Dave from Texas. Kelly and I have been doing quite a few little mini with the Harris County Medical Society recently, and it's all doctors that show up to these things. Yeah. Food there, and we've been using the value props to these docs, and I mean, it really hits home for them when you're talking about days in AR, reduced costs, and greater revenue. So it's been a it's been well received.
Very good, very good. I think the one thing that you don't want to miss there, and it doesn't sound like you are, but just to make sure, is the idea that the emotional part of this is not just the financial. That is one part. Getting paid is certainly emotional for a doc. But it's also the idea of allowing them and their staff to do what they really, really do best and got into business to do, which is treat the well-being of patients, heal patients. So I know that we all know that, and I know they know it, and it's like a wink understood kind of thing, but if you can, put that in there, because I think that really rounds out the entire RealMed philosophy, is we allow you to do what you do, what your core competency is, and what you're the best in the world at, and let us handle the things that are frustrating and complex and difficult.
Well, to that point, in the tagline we used with the Montgomery County Medical Society was, we help you get paid for the services you rendered.
Yeah.
And so it was really, a lot of doctors want to hold payers accountable. And so that was the terminology we used in developing the material that we handed out, and the talking points was the idea of, you get paid for what you've actually done, and we help you hold the payers accountable for that.
See, that's very emotional.
It resonates more with the doctors than just the speed of payment.
Very good. Okay, well, keep working it. If you run into trouble, or you're not getting the reaction you want, give me a call. I've had a lot of good calls in the last couple of weeks from people who, not just about the value statement, but about other things. So, and this is where we're getting some of the content for this call, some of the coaching I've done. So if you have, if you're struggling with it, you know, like we said when we started, the perfect world is if you create the slideshow, or you do little 1 minute, value expression, and they are so blown away by it, they hand you an open checkbook. That's the ideal, but that's probably not going to happen right up front. But I think that's a good goal to have, is you want to keep working on this until which time the prospect says, where have you been? How quickly can we start? That's exactly what I feel and we need. So don't settle for, yeah, that's nice, go ahead and tell me more. You know, set your standards high and just work into it. Okay, I want to spend just a couple minutes here reiterating what we talked about in the first session in January, and I'm just going to spend, like I say, a couple minutes, just do a little bullet-pointed recap. I did this in the video. I hope you all got the video, because I want to make this a reinforcement session in addition to some new things. We spent a fair amount of time in that session on the inner game, on how to think, how to get your mind right as you're making prospecting calls, as you're in the selling cycle with these folks. Getting your mind right is the number one thing you can do. It's the thing that separates the high achievers from the at-leasters and the low achievers, and to me, in sales and business. Is your head properly screwed on straight when you go out to the marketplace to sell? And to us, what it being screwed on straight means is, do you see yourself as a provider of valuable solutions to people who have problems? I said at the bottom of that one-page teleseminar PDF that I sent you, I think I put it there somewhere, the issue is not should the customer buy from me, the issue is, does this customer have pains and problems that he doesn't deserve to live with, and that I can help him resolve? And that's the real question, and the closer you can keep your mind focused around how you can bring value by solving problems, the stronger you're going to be in front of prospects. One of the things that came up in two of the seven emails that I got were, how do I keep the prospect how do I keep the prospect's interest from waning when we get two or three weeks out from the last sales call? You know, how do we keep these things moving? The momentum, I'm there, they're excited, and then I call them back in a few days or a week later, and the excitement has waned. Well, I can tell you how to do it, and there's no words you can do to get that, make that happen. What you can do is you can say to the prospect in those meetings where they're excited, now, you seem very excited, Mr. Prospect. What's going to happen in a week when I call you back to make the next appointment and you're not as excited anymore? How are we going to deal with that? Because what I find is that's been my experience, is that, you know, we're talking about it, we're in the moment, we're pumped, we're jazzed, we're juiced, And after we all both have a few nights sleep, I want to make sure that you're still going to be not as excited, but still interested in what this can do for you. So how are we going to deal with that if that happens? And it's amazing, just by you asking that question and having them answer it will help you when you call them back, because now they've made a commitment to keep the momentum. So don't, when I wouldn't even wait for the momentum to wane. When they're at the height of excitement about what you can do, when you're there in the meeting after the demonstration, bring that up. Say those words. My experience is that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes this is the height of your excitement. You're jazzed and juiced, and when I call you back in a week, you're not going to be as jazzed. So how do we keep that from happening? Let's just talk about that. Talk through that. Because what you're doing here is battling human nature. I heard a guy interviewed on talk radio yesterday who was in Iraq, and he was going door to door in Iraq, kind of ferreting out terrorists and bad people. And he says, you know, you can't run on adrenaline for 5,000 homes. He says, you would wear yourself out. You'd get sick. So you can't let adrenaline be the guide. You have to make common sense and logic your guide. You have to be sharp and aware, but fighting a war is not all about adrenaline, because you'd run out of it. And I think that's the same thing here. The prospect has adrenaline, and you can't expect them to have the same adrenaline 2 weeks after a meeting as they did in the last 5 minutes of that meeting. So you have to prepare them for the letdown and make sure that you have that discussion. So that's one thing I think that you can do. Second thing is, we talked about selling strategy, and we talked about the strategy of problem solving. And this whole system that we talked about there was built on 5 steps of problem solving. Number one, share with the prospect your intent. My intent today, Mr. Prospect, is to ask you some questions, to find out a little bit about your practice, to share with you some of the ways we're helping our customers to improve their the financial and the billing, the whole process of getting paid for your services. At the end of this time, we can decide whether it makes sense for me to come back and do a more formal demonstration or presentation or a documentation of these thoughts. So make sure that your selling strategy includes that statement of intent up front. By the way, I'm taping this call. We'll make it available. So if I say something you're intrigued with and want to go back, there'll be a way to do that. Second thing is, on the selling strategy, is you want to know what's the compelling reason. Prospects don't invite you in for no reason. You might be really, really good on the phone getting the appointment, but there's still something that's caused them to take out time in their day to see you. And I want to make sure I always understand that up front and at the end of the call. What's the pain? Now, I've heard several of you, and I hope I'm not getting in trouble for this. I don't think I am. Maybe I am. Anyway, I've heard many of you talk about pain points. And while I think I know what you mean by that, I think you have to be very careful that pain points aren't just an intellectual exercise in a problem. So, for example, a pain point might be, yeah, we're not getting paid fast enough, our AR, too many days in AR. But that's not pain. That's just a symptom of the pain. What's the pain there? Anybody? Tell me the real pain of not getting paid quick enough.
Can't pay your bills.
Can't pay your bills. Can't pay your people. Can't grow. Floating checks. Don't feel good about the practice. If I'm always fighting to get paid, how good can I feel about the practice? So don't let the pain point be the pain. So from now on, when I hear you guys say his pain point was, or you talk about a pain point, I'm going to stop you and say, no, I want to hear the pain. I want to hear what the emotional reason that he cares about that pain point. So I know some of you use that terminology. I think that's fine. I just got to make sure that we're not talking about two different things here. I don't think we are, but I don't want to take a chance. So the first step is statement of intent. The second step in the process is finding out where the pain is or where the possibility is. I like that first conversation when you do that. The third step, anybody know? Third step in the sales process. What's the problem and what does the problem
The economics.
Right. Very good. What's the problem cost? What are the economics of this? And I always want you to, I don't want you to talk price ever until you find out what the economics of the pain is. Now, some of you have diagnostics that you do that with. I know, Scott, you've got one that you've used, if Scott's on the call. And I think you were going to send that out to everybody, hopefully that you've taken some things from that. But I want to make sure that there's at least a discussion with the practice or with the clinic or with the billing service about what are the economics of your current situation. Remember, they're not just going to manufacture an answer on the spot. What's this problem cost you to have, Scott? Oh, $13,500. You're not going to hear that. What you need to do is say, well, let's talk about it. If they say, I don't know, you got to say, well, let's look at it. Let's talk about it. You've got to educate them as to how to look at the economic pains that they may be having. And we can talk, we're going to talk more about that next meeting, but I think it's important you at least ask the question and have a conversation. The fourth step is the decision, and that really is who cares about this problem. I just met with a president of a company today, and we were talking and talking and talking, and as the more we talked, the more I realized there was a CEO who was involved, a family member who was involved in the company. It wasn't day-to-day, but still had plenty of influence and authority and still wanted to know what was going on day-to-day. Well, chances are, even though this president's the president, he's probably not making the ultimate decision on training their 17 people. He's probably not. So at some point, we're going to need to have a joint discussion with the CEO and the president and I. And if you listen for these things, you can always you'll be able to answer the question, who else cares about solving this problem? You have to think about it from a who else cares standpoint, not from a who do I need to call on. You never ask the question, who else do I need to be calling on? You ask the question, who else cares about the solving of this problem? And the fourth stage is, is the recommendation. And remember we talked about it, instead of being a presentation, we talk about it in terms of a recommendation, because what are we recommending? Group? We're recommending a what for a what?
A solution to the problem.
Beautiful. Solution to the problem.
You can make check out the Keith Bowden.
Okay, Keith. Is that Boudon? So I want to think about it as a recommendation. Up front in your sales cycle, when you're having that initial discussion, hopefully you're laying out the process. You know, that let me tell you how we work. In fact, I did this today to this president. I said, you know, here's how we work. I usually have at least one or two calls with sort of the senior people to make sure that there really is an issue worth fixing. Then after that, I come back with some thoughts and some dialogue, and it's really just a bullet-pointed list of some things that might help us make a decision. And at the end of that time, we add and delete from that list, and then I come back to you with a recommendation. And why do I do that? Keith, you think you're so smart. Why do I do that? Why don't I just come back on the second call with a recommendation?
I'm not so smart, Bill, so I'm going to pass.
Well, one option is I could go find the pain and then go back with a recommendation, but I don't do that. I insert another step. Why do you suppose I do that?
It's the reaffirmation that you understand their issues and pain.
Right.
And you may uncover an additional pain.
You guys have seen this. You always uncover additional pain when you do the demo, right? I mean, there's always things. Oh, my gosh. God, we have all sorts of problems with that. You can't possibly cover everything in a one-hour meeting that they have problems with. So leave your and maybe this will work for some of you, too. Leave yourself an open. If it means you having one more sales call in there, I don't think anybody's going to be upset at you, because if it closes, that's a small price to pay for a conversion. So this whole idea of I'm going to ask you some questions, we're going to do the demonstration, then we're going to come back and share with you some of our thoughts, and then we're going to do the presentation. If that feels right to you, then I would suggest you try it. But at any rate, it's a recommendation that we're looking to do. So those are the five steps. Statement of intent, it's like that upfront agreement. Second part is what's the compelling reason for them to change. And in today's economy, in today's society, people don't change at the drop of a hat. Everybody's running a little scared these days, and so you're going to have more pain than ever now to have them make a commitment to change what they're doing. What they're doing may not be working very well, but they also know there's pain in change. And so you've got to tilt the teeter-totter there to be in your favor and have more problems that they can work on. Another thing that we talked about a little bit, and then I'll stop after this one and we can talk, and I want to get some lessons here, is creating an environment for the truth. Now, here's a couple. You know, when I get these emails from you guys and talk on the phone, I love to solve problems, but I'm always looking for the words that you use to describe the problem. And I get an email, which I didn't get. This is just an example. If I get an email that says, "Bill, I've got this prospect. I've been working with them for 6 months. They don't seem to have any urgency. They can't make a commitment. I've proposed and reproposed 3 times. What can I say to get them to make a decision? Love, John. P.S. I'm way behind quota this month. I really need to get this sale. What's the only thing I really look at?"
They're not detached.
Right. I look at the P.S. I say, wait a minute, you really need the sale, so maybe that's what's happening. Maybe the prospect senses you need this so bad and are so desperate for it, maybe it scares the heck out of them. So I'm always listening to what you say, and a couple times in these emails, I have heard people say, without saying the name here, let me just see, she was willing to take the next step. This is the prospect. This person says, "Yeah, we had a good call, and this prospect was willing to take the next step." Well, now, what do you suppose I look at when I hear the word willing? This was just a word that this person used. So, go ahead.
Is they're trying to convince her?
Yeah. And what is she doing?
She's resisting.
Right. And finally, he's been so convincing, maybe, and this is just maybe, that she's, okay, we'll go to the next step. She becomes willing, reluctantly willing is what I read. Now, that may not be the case at all. Might not be the case. But I think when we talk about creating an environment for the truth, the environment for the truth simply, or the truth simply means, do they have any problems that are costing them money that they need to fix? So let's suppose that I get done with a call, and it's a great first call, and I kind of get the vibe that the prospect wants to go to the next step. They even say, you know, well, why don't we go ahead and set up a demonstration, and you get me some pricing. What if they say that, but yet you just don't get in your heart that they're really, really committed? I'm sure you've had that before, where there's a vibe that they throw off that's, okay, yeah, we'll do the next step, but you just feel in your gut there's no real commitment there. I don't want you to go to the next step until you address that. What might you say when you get that feeling? Anybody? How might you bring that up to the prospect?
You could just hit it head on. This is Scott, by the way. You could say, you know, Mr. Prospect or Ms. Prospect, I kind of get the sense, I kind of get the feeling that you may not be completely committed to the next step. Is there something else that is keeping you from going there, or that you want to talk about?
Okay. I love the first part. I'd stop after the first part. I wouldn't ask another question. I think what you just said is perfect. You know, I'm getting ready to schedule this appointment, and there's something inside my gut that says that I'm more excited than you are about this problem that's going to be solved. So I feel like you're just not truly committed to this. Now, you got to be careful about challenging someone's commitment. But I think if you take it, like, was that Scott? Is that you that said that?
That's correct.
Okay, sorry. But I think if you do it right and do it from an I message, this has to be an I message to the prospect. You know, I'm feeling like you're okay with going to the next step, but something just doesn't seem right. It seems like you're just not sold. Maybe I haven't done a good job. Maybe I missed the boat. Maybe I didn't hear something I should have heard. And just shut up and let them tell you. They will always come back with something you can use. They will either say, no, Scott, that's not it at all. I'm just, you know, what I'm sitting here thinking is, how in the hell are we going to sell our president on this? Or how are we going to sell the senior doctors on this? Well, guess what? That's information. Just because they don't seem excited doesn't mean they're not excited, but there's something going on inside their brain. I got to dig it out. I got to find out what it is. So by you saying, I get the feeling you're not as excited now as you were maybe 30 minutes ago, they'll tell you the truth. And if they say, well, what gives you that idea, Scott? Just a feeling. Maybe I was wrong. Sounds like I was wrong. Well, no, I just don't know how we're going to sell this internally. Okay, fine. Let's talk about that. You see, sometimes I think we, and not RealMed, but all of us, we get so impatient that we don't allow the prospect to finish their thought in their head. Just because they've ended a sentence doesn't mean they're finished with the thought. And if you're waiting to jump in right at the end of a sentence, you may be jumping right in between a thought, and the next thought might be valuable in terms of you selling them something or you understanding what their pain, deeper levels of pain. So that was a little bit of a rant there, but I want to make sure that we're allowing the prospect to share with us the problem. We're creating an environment where they are selling us, and if you don't feel like they're committed, you have to ask the question. Okay, I'm going to stop there just for a moment. Catch my breath. I want you guys, if anybody has learned anything from that first 20, 30 minutes, or if the last little exercise was helpful, just any lessons that have happened so far today. Seacrest out. I think I'm watching too much American Idol. No lesson. Just 30 minutes of gibberish, not one lesson. Come on, you guys, make something up, for God's sakes.
Hey, this is Scott. Can you hear me?
Fine, yeah, thanks.
Okay. It has to do with number four, the decision, who cares about solving this problem.
Yeah.
On my last meeting with the prospect, I tried to keep that circle of care in mind during the meeting and with a follow-up email to her. But I don't know that I really conveyed that correctly or positioned my questioning correctly so as to get her to understand that I need to know who this impacts in your organization. And so I could use a little bit of help in that particular area of getting that piece resolved.
Okay, can you explain to people who might have forgotten or who weren't there what the circle of care is? Because I like that. Can you just take a minute and explain that?
Well, sure. I mean, if you've identified, let's say you've identified a particular area of pain with the prospect that he or she describes to you in their process or whatever it is, you need to try to find out who else cares about that. Who it's impacting directly in the organization. Is it the CFO, or is it an end user, or does the CEO even care about that? And once you can find that out, then you need to speak with each one of those individuals about that particular problem and get their input.
Okay. Very good.
So then when you go full circle, then you and hopefully identify as many of the critical pain points as possible, if not all of them, and then talk to each associated individual that's impacted by each of those pain areas.
Okay. And so
that's the goal.
And so you talked about that, and then what did you get back from her?
Well, this was actually, I had sent you an email about being a little bit impatient about her getting back to me to commit to a demo date, which she actually did this afternoon. So we've got that set. That's
so it worked. So you sent a letter to me, and she called you back. It's amazing how that happens.
But you must have sent her a letter and said, you better call him back, because I'm working with these guys.
You don't think I'm just training you guys. I'm training your clients, too.
Yeah, but with respect to the other people involved who I asked specifically on her executive team and others who would care about some of these issues, I don't know that resonated.
How do you know it didn't?
Well, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't gotten any feedback from her on, well, yeah, Bill's going to be at this meeting, too, and he cares about this, and Susan's my supervisor, and she cares about that. I haven't gotten any feedback from her about that. Maybe,
Are you leaving it up to her to decide that? How is she to decide that?
Well, I don't know who the personnel are in her organization who certain things are impacting like she does.
Well, can't you ask that? After you talk about the circle of care, can't you say, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions about who might be in this circle? So, Martha, who else is impacted or cares about getting this problem solved? I mean, can't you help her walk through that?
Well, yeah, I can, and I guess, that in and of itself, I think, was where I had dropped the ball, is that I didn't frame the question that way.
Oh, okay.
It was not was not speaking to her directly that way. You know, here, and that's what I need to improve on.
I got you. Well, you did it. So we just re-engineered that and did it. Now remember this.
Right.
This circle of care. The thing I like about this is that I like the word care better than I like the word decision. The question is not who makes the decision, who's involved in the decision process. You will naturally find out of that out if you find out who cares about the problem.
Right.
Because there's no manual that they have for how to buy from RealMed. There's no manual for that. So you're sort of making it up as you go, as are they. And so once you find out there's four people that care, you might say, well, so what are your thoughts, Martha? Do you think we should have all these people in a room? Do you think it's better if I call on them individually? Do you think it's better if we leave them out and bring them in the 11th hour? What are your thoughts? They will always tell you. They know exactly how the organization works. See, I like that better than, well, you need to get the CEO and the president and the CFO in here for the next meeting or I'm not coming. And I know you would never say that, any of you, but I also want you to get a little bit more assertive and aggressive about who else needs to be involved in the next meeting, because that's going to decide whether you're wasting your time or not. So hopefully that helps. But I like you take the circle of care, explain it, but don't stop there. Ask the next question, which is, okay, now that I've explained how we look at this, what are your thoughts? Who else do you think cares about this, should be involved in it?
Right.
Okay. Any other lessons? We've got a few more minutes here for lessons from that first little rant. This has been a good call. You guys are good.
And this is Ryan. Something that we're talking about is giving, you know, telling the prospect that you're not hearing what you usually hear from a prospect that is in pain. Not only is it giving them an opportunity, you know, you're gaining knowledge from them, but another thing is you're seeing what you're communicating, where it's landing,
yep.
And if they're catching what you're trying to communicate with them.
Very good. Very good. I would rather know that I'm not landing when there's still hope for me to recover than in the 11th hour when they say, we're just not going to do anything now.
Right.
It's too late then. And I've gotten a couple of those emails and calls where, you know, how do I handle it when the prospect says, we've just decided not to do anything? Well, that's a hard jam to get out of. Unless they came to you early and said, if we don't fix this, we're going to be out of business. If it's that compelling, if it's that emotional and dire, if it is, I think you can go back to them and say, you know, look, I can't let this happen. You told me 2 months ago you're about ready to go out of business. I refuse to let that happen. Sorry. So when's our next meeting? You can really be indignant about it. But most people don't come to you with that up front. So I want to prevent that. We've decided not to do anything. I want to prevent that from happening, because once it happens, that's a hard one to get out of. Good, Ryan. Very good. Good pickup. One more lesson than anybody had from the first few minutes today. I'll call on Phil here in a minute, see if he's still on. Oh, he's not. I know that. Anybody else? Nobody else learned anything. Any other lesson from the first 35 minutes? All right. We're going to keep moving. Here's one, and I'm not going to read the name, so you'll know who this is, but my problem is getting to talk to the right person. Getting past the gatekeeper is the issue, and I'm sort of assuming that all of you probably have this issue to one degree or another. It happens in every sales organization. It's how do I get past the person who is paid to not let people like me buy, right? I mean my simple answer is you cannot look at this person as the enemy. And a gatekeeper, the way we talk about that, and I've been remiss in talking about that way too. The way we talk about it is that person is set up to keep us out. Well, you're going to do battle with it. Someone you want in, they're there to keep you out, so you're going to do battle. I don't want to think of them that way. This person's doing their job. They're keeping the riffraff out. They're keeping irrelevant people out. They're keeping people who are going to waste time out. Well, that's not you. That is not you. And so I always like to include the gatekeeper person and say, you know, let me tell you who I'm, I don't know who I'm interested in talking to. Let me tell you the kinds of problems we solve, and then you tell me who I should start with here. So make them part of the sales cycle. Tell them what kinds of problems you solve and how you have helped other practices. Be very considerate of their time. You know, I'm not really sure your practice, there's any room for improvement in your practice, but we find that with many practices there are, and the purpose of my call is to start having some dialogue. It's not to sell anything. It's just to see who I might start with to see if I can help you guys. It comes from a spirit of helping, of serving, of contributing, of aiding, of solving, not from a perspective of selling. So, I hope you can try that, and I hope that helps, at least in your own head, get past this gatekeeper idea. The second thing is, this person asks, is which is a very good question. I asked some questions, and what I've been getting is we're pretty happy with what we have. So, does anybody else get that? Pretty happy with what we have?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I mean, pretty typical. So the question is, how does a prospect conclude that based on what you're saying? What's the mechanic of the logic there? What would you have to say to them that would even have them understand what it was you brought and understand what they're getting and conclude that they have what they need and don't need anything else? I'm not sure how that happens. What are we saying that's causing them to say that? Because we're saying something there, aren't we? Rob, you've been in this business a long time. I'm sorry. I'll shut up. Go ahead.
No, this is Ryan. Sometimes I think that if we're perceived as a number in terms of the sales, you know, as a salesperson calling, they immediately put their wall up and they just think, oh no, I don't need it. What this guy's selling. That's sometimes how I feel.
Yeah. So what are you doing to cause that?
I was going, you know, just going right into the spiel. Well, we'll take care of all your problems, and not even knowing what their problems was. But I was having some good conversations with people by just calling and throwing it out there in the front that this might be an odd phone call, or, you know, either that, or I'm not even sure if this is the right, you know, the appropriate phone call to be placing with you. And then I would just kind of go into some, you know, I work for a claims processing company, and I'm, you know, looking for, see how you're processing your claims, and so on and so forth, and that people would open up if you, you know, just be kind of that upfront agreement, or, you know, saying that I might this just be a bad phone call. I don't know.
It's good.
You tell me, and that's fine. And people are more likely to just keep talking with you on the phone.
I think the key there, Ryan, and you said it, and I even just got your when you role played it shortly there, is you got to be real with people. If you turn into this salesperson that's smooth and slick and that talks fast and that talks loud and that doesn't have time for any pause, any breath, I think you send yourself down the wrong path. And then you call me and say, well, gosh, these people aren't very open-minded here in Chicago. They're not seeing me. Well, maybe there's something you did. Oops. Maybe there's something you did. And so I like, and I think we talked about it in the meeting, I like, and if you're at a place where you can write it down, not driving, of course, but write down the tone, T-O-N-E, tone of resignation. And that is the only tone to have when you make that first call, especially if it's a cold, drop-down cold call. I'm making these calls. I have no earthly clue whether I can be of any value to you. Let me tell you what we do and how we help companies, and then you tell me if there's anybody there that might make sense for me to talk to. And it has to be a tone, you're resigned to the fact that there might be nothing here. And that's the opposite of the way most salespeople make that call. Most salespeople make the call hopeful, excited, enthusiastic, eager to please, zealots. Nobody likes a zealot. Sorry. They don't. So you have to just drop back. Just make your approach more real. Have fun with them. These cold calls are painful for you. They're painful for them. Why make them more painful by, you know, reciting something that doesn't feel right? I think I told you I've got a client. I don't tell you this story. I got a client who makes cold calls, and he literally says, "This is a call," at the very beginning of the call. He says, "This is a cold call," and I must tell you, you probably don't like getting them any more than I like making them. But it's how our company has decided to reach out and connect with people. And then he goes into his thing. I have no idea if we can help you at all, but I wanted to just connect with you, tell you a little bit about what we do, and then I'll leave it up to you. You tell me if you want to talk or not. If you do, that's fine. If you don't, then you know, no one's lost anything. He said it's amazing. Once he changed his approach, it's amazing how many more appointments he gets, because people then aren't scared. They're not afraid. They're not on the defensive. They don't have the walls up and the fences. So hopefully that helps. Go back and listen to this tape, those of you who want tape. It's an old word, isn't it? It's like I'm splicing the tape here when we get done. Splice it with Scotch tape. Go back and listen to the recording, I should say, and listen to how I said it. Listen to the tone of resignation and practice it, practice it, practice it. You get good at cold calling, you start booking 5 out of 10 cold calls, you can name your income in this company. So, because the issue is always getting in front of the right people, getting enough appointments, that's always the issue. So even though I don't like cold calling, I think there's other things you should be doing. Don't take it totally out of your toolkit. Just get better at it. Thoughts? Anything else on cold calling or on the approach?
Hey, Bill, that's kind of the approach I've been using when I make my initial call is, you know, hey, here, if we can do the same things for you we've done with our other clients. I did want to see if I could have 20 minutes of your time to come by and introduce myself and, you know, talk about what your challenges are and, you know, see after the end of 20 minutes if it might be reason to real bad or not. I really don't know.
Yeah.
And that's worked. Every time I've used that, it's worked.
Every time? That's pretty good odds.
Every time. And, I mean, the words change a little bit, but the point gets across.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes, I think, is a good time. It's not too long, but it's long enough
yep.
to get to know one another.
Yep.
And it works.
Very good. So keep doing it. If it works every time, don't stop it.
I mean, I haven't had someone say, "I'm not interested," or "No, I don't have 20 minutes to give you."
Yeah, good. So the very power of being a human being on this planet, we suck out of the equation when we act inhuman, when we read a script. So get back to the human nature. It's just be human. People like that. Be vulnerable. People like vulnerable. People like to help other people. Who's ringing there? Somebody's ringing. Okay. Okay, next question. When meetings get pushed out too far, the prospect tends to forget the pain and become more hesitant. I think we talked about that. Somebody's leaning on their keyboard. No. Hello. All right. So the question is, how do I compress the time between meetings, which I think is really important? And even if you compress it, you still want to do that, you know, how can we keep the momentum going? Because I can see you're excited. I can see you're jumping up and down and all pumped up. How do we keep that momentum so that we don't lose it in between now and the next meeting? And if you have that honest conversation, that will work. Second thing is, and we talked about a little bit, and I want to know, I forgot to ask this earlier, I gave you something to use at the back end of each call. Do anybody remember what it was? After you're finished with a call, a sales call, face-to-face, what did I tell you to ask? What did I suggest you ask? I didn't tell you to do anything. What did I suggest you ask?
What was the one thing that stood out?
What was the one thing that we talked about today that stood out in your mind, you know, that sort of rose above all of the things? Has anybody asked that? Nobody's asked that. So here's the assignment. I want you to ask that. I want every one of you to ask that in the next week. I don't care if it's a phone call, face-to-face. It's got to be a sales call with a prospect, though. And I want you to reply to me on email what happened when you ask it. And I'm going to pull a name out of a hat to give a prize to. That's how I'll do it. I'll bribe you guys. Okay? So in the next week,
find an autographed copy of your book.
Autographed copy of the book, yeah. It'll be better than the book. Find a way to ask that question and then let me know what happens. And that question should become a habit. I did a program after you guys after I did yours here a couple months ago, and there was a guy in the crowd, the president of this firm, it was a logistics holding company out of Chicago. The president of the firm came up. I recommended they ask that question. He comes up and says, I've got a meeting with one of the VPs of Home Depot next week. He says, and these guys have been they're frustrating to work with. You know, Home Depot is just a big, tough negotiator kind of company. He says, but they really need us, and they've got a lot of problems. And he says, I'm going to ask that very question, because that's the kind of question that will get them past us being a vendor and get us to this partnership arrangement that we've been talking about forever. And he emailed me back and said it went great. He said that it did, you know, the call was good anyway, but he said when we asked that question, three people were in the room from Home Depot, and each of them had a different thing that they answered that with. So the question is powerful. Make sure you ask it. Okay, fair, good on the contest there. All right.
Hey, Bill, can we ask more than one prospect and turn in more than one response?
Oh, now that's it. Now we're starting to build some new rules here around that. Let me see. Yeah, every prospect you ask that to, you send me an email. But don't send me one email for each prospect, so that way I can just pull them off, print them, put them in a hat, and draw.
All right.
Okay? Now, what we should also do is Phil should pitch in a little bit and say if we close a piece of business because of that question, you should get like an extra Starbucks gift certificate or something. And Phil would say, well, that's what you're supposed to be doing anyway. Why would I want to give you more for that? It's good. Okay. The more eager we are, the more we suck the eagerness out of the room for the prospect. How about that for something profound? And you probably might not agree with that, but I think the more eager we are to make the sale, the less eagerness we allow in the room for the prospect to be eager to get the solution to their problem. So if you're finding a lack of eagerness on the part of the prospect, a lack of enthusiasm, lack of commitment, then ask yourself the question, am I getting in the way? Is my quest for the sale so strong that it's zapping their energy on the way through the process? And I've seen that happen so many times with prospects that I've listened to phone calls on and such. Okay. Here's another question that I had. We got a couple minutes. Does anybody have anything, any lessons here before we go to the last point, which is email? I've had a lot of questions about email. Does anybody have anything before? Because I want to make sure we got about 8 minutes left that we cover everything on your mind. Any other lessons? Give me one lesson that someone has learned so far today that's something a little bit different, or maybe it confirms something that you were suspicious of. Okay, we'll start calling on people. Kelly. Kelly.
I had to put myself off mute.
I know. I understand.
One of the things that was different for me was actually acknowledging the fact that you are making a cold call, saying it up front, and just being real about that. I had never actually thought about saying those words as part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think just being very open and upfront about it really would be disarming to the prospect. So it's a little bit different. It's a little more in your face than I had thought about in the past, but I think it could be very effective.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is the truth, right?
Right. I mean, if we're forced to do those types of calls, that's, I think, a better way to try to do it.
Yeah.
This is Kim. I have to agree. I agree with Kelly. I think that that's one thing that I got out of this too.
Good. If you must make them, then at least have a strategy for them, and that's it kind of lifts the burden. You know, we're talking about burden. It kind of lifts the pressure away from the sales, the phone call to identify what it is up front.
This is Dave. You know, the more I listen to how you sell and how you talk about it, the more it seems to me that it's more of a caring situation with the prospect, so that they feel that they can share with you, you can share with them. You don't really have a hidden agenda. You're not trying to sell them. It's just, if you've got questions in your mind, ask them and prompt them to ask the questions of you. So it truly becomes a sharing dialogue and moves the process along.
Very, very good, yeah. That's what it should be.
Kind of like in your in the last training, Bill, it's kind of like calling the game at times.
What is?
Well, I mean, if you could be, I mean, one side is being real with them. That's certainly being real. But the other side is, you know, just like when they were talking about being very upfront, it's kind of, that's also kind of, I'm calling the game. I'm being very upfront, being very real with you. You know, this is a cold call. I don't like it. Or not that I don't like it, but it's uneasy for me. It's uneasy for you to get them. So it's to me, it's kind of like calling the game.
Yes, I see what you mean. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
It's kind of like the, when in the very first part when you were talking about getting your mind right, and we got off on the, when you're losing momentum and the prospect's interest is waning a little bit, and you're talking about your, you know, you can't let adrenaline run the process. That was kind of kicked me, because it's, then you offered, you know, be real about it. Yeah, you're kind of excited about it now. What are you going to do in a week when I call back and you're not quite so excited? How are we going to work through this?
Very good. See, Keith, you can pull that off. You can be direct with people because of you just have a nature that is a polite, gentle nature. So you can basically say anything you want to someone. You can be as tough on them as they want. They're not going to feel it because of how you deliver that. So I think you are also such a nice guy. You are sometimes reluctant, I suspect, to even go there in the first place because it feels to you a little bit too forceful. Don't know that. Just a thought. Okay. Dave, you said something there that I was getting ready to react to, and now I lost it. Okay. Had a lot of questions about emails and how do I write emails, and I've tried to help some of you with it, and it's a call that I get from a lot of our clients. I will tell you that I am not a copywriter. It requires a very different discipline to write so that people take action. What I find the mistake we make sometimes is we write these really long, well-composed, grammatically perfect emails, and then we expect magic to happen. We expect them to drive someone to action. And I don't find that usually happens. So I always opt for short. I would rather send an email to someone that said, Bill, I got your name from somebody else. They thought it might make sense for us to talk. I'm around. Would like to catch up sometime, Bill. Rather than telling him all about the company and why he should hire us and all that. So I would just, I mean, I think it's okay to put all that in writing, but don't have expectations that you're going to craft some kind of email, send it out to 10 people, and all 10 are going to call with their checkbook open. Really unlikely, especially on an approach email where they don't know you and you don't know them. I think that's really a hard email to craft. So I'm happy to help you work through some of these things if the situation is right, but be careful about how much emphasis and how much listening you expect that email to do. Okay, what else was there? Was there one more thing here? Kelly, you and I talked about a situation with a presentation you did. Can you give me a quick update on that? And I thought we talked about some interesting things. Whatever happened with that?
Yeah, so it's actually specifically a presentation to a large group of CSA individuals within U.S. Oncology.
That's right.
And
that's
when we had talked, what I was looking for your specific help with was tailoring that upfront agreement, since we had a lot of different people that were going to be participating in that. Some people had seen RealMed in the past, some people had not. Some people were open to the meeting, some people maybe
that's
were
right,
not.
Right.
And what we come up with together is basically saying up front that a lot of you may be skeptical. You may have heard about us, maybe you know some of our clients, maybe you've never heard of us, and you don't really believe what you've heard from other people. So I think by acknowledging that up front, it really just got things all out on the table. And so if people were closed-minded when they came to the discussion, hopefully by acknowledging that, they
yes.
were a little bit more.
Yes. How'd it go?
I thought that was a very effective way to approach the group. It's tough to know because it was predominantly people attending remotely.
Yeah.
But I think that the feedback that we've gotten thus far has been pretty good. So I would use that approach again in the future. And I think that's a really key thing. And I would suggest that if other people have any reservations about their upfront agreement or if they feel they need to tailor it, I think really getting that right, given the audience that you're going to be talking to, is so key.
Yeah.
It's very important. And I used a variation of that when we met with Blue Cross of Texas. So, I've used that type of an approach in multiple situations.
Good.
But I think it's good because when you do have people, especially when you have a lot of people that get pulled into a meeting that maybe didn't have the option of really deciding themselves whether or not they wanted to be there, they were forced to be there. I mean, a lot of times people bring baggage into those situations. So I think acknowledging
no.
that.
No.
I just think it's a good thing.
So here's what Kelly realized, and you all will have a situation like this sometime in the next couple of weeks where everybody's not on the same page of the book. Some people are really pumped, some people are not, some people feel like they have to be there and they'd rather not be. So you've got to figure out a way to create an upfront agreement that gets everybody's attention, that acknowledges the fact that we're all in different places here. I mean, from a not from a geographical standpoint, but just in terms of desire to change. And when you do that, it calms the room. You own the room now because you're the first person they've ever had who has come in and started a meeting like that. So if you really want to get the back end of the sales process right, get the front end right. Work with your managers on the upfront agreement. If you have a call coming up in the next week, a face-to-face or some kind of meaningful call, and you're struggling with the upfront agreement, call me. We will work through it. There's ways to work through it, and there's things you should be doing that will help you as you run the sales process. Good. Thank you for that update, Kelly. That was good. I remembered it was something about the upfront agreement, and I knew there was a reason I asked, but I wasn't sure what it was. Okay. I will send out an email to the link. I'll keep this audio up for probably a week, so you can download it. You can right-click and download to your device. And I would suggest you listen to it again. There were some things we talked about, and we will look forward to the next call. And don't forget the email contest. Email, what did you learn or what resonated with you, and I'll pull them out of a hat next Friday. But it needs to be next week. It needs to be sometime next week that you email me that. Okay, group, very nice work today. I'm around next week if you have any coaching needs.